Okay, well, so good morning. So we'll move back to questions of quantifying or characterizing temperature response. In my case, I'll be looking at wheat appearance rate. And, of course, I was thinking, there are 1,000 papers out there on temperature response of wheat. But, of course, there are good reasons for thinking and taking a second look at the temperature response, a big argument being global climate change and some other consequences. Here's the increase in hard red wheat prices in the U.S. and an interesting new set of data for sea level rise. So certainly, climate change gives us something to worry about. Leaf appearance is a driver of leaf area development. And if we don't get our temperature response right, we'll have problems simulating the potential impacts of global warming on wheat production. And as I look through the data, there are a lot of inconsistencies. We see large variations in the reported base temperatures, very few estimates at the optimal or potential lethal temperature. There seem to be there are a lot of differences in how the responses are estimated, whether cultivars are, whether there's a cultivar effect, acclimation, and so on down. The control environments may not relate well to field responses, and so on. One thing, this area that particularly interests me is which temperatures really regulate the temperature appearance, and Greg McMaster's in the room has, I think, an underappreciated paper where they attempted to use soil warming to show that the crown temperature, clearly the crown is where the growth activity is, so that should affect the leaf appearance rate. And what they actually found was that warming, these paired lines, I think, are the warm soil versus the normal soil, and there was little or no effect on leaf appearance. There was an effect on emergence, but after that, there's nothing. So there's some questions there about what are the underlying mechanisms. Do we just assume Arrhenius kinetics? Is there something there with the membrane phase transitions? Or is it possible that plants have specific sort of thermostatic loci, like little switches? And there is evidence of two papers in Arabidopsis for that. But at this point, it's back to getting, for me at least, is getting better data on a base temperature, optimal temperature. And as we're looking through the literature, we go as low as almost minus 6 degrees for Slafer and Rawson using variable temperature regimes in growth chambers, and I think a range of genotypes, minus 2 up to plus 3 or plus 2. So the big difference in base temperatures, and of course this has a large effect on what you model. Bruce Kimball, who's in here and will be talking next on his infrared heater system, was very interested in evaluating the infrared system. And so we planned this hot cereal experiment, cereal for wheat, cereal because the wheat has grown seriously. And we plant it essentially every 6 weeks for 2 years. So here you see, what do we have? September planting, an October planting, a December planting, and the January planting. And in these, the larger plantings, you can see the infrared heating apparatus in the field, and it's been presented in previous sessions. And again, Bruce will talk about it. But we have, let's say a total of 15 planting dates, 6 with the heaters. We used a Yocoro Rojo, which is the same spring wheat that was used in the FACE experiments and has also been used in a lot of other research over time. This drip irrigated and well fertilized to try and get optimal growth. And again, we've measured various things on it. I think the gas exchange, the yield data, the phenology data have been published. It's been used in Robert Grant is here, is able to run it in the EcoSys model and simulate the temperature regime quite well. Today we'll look at the leaf data. And just to give you an idea, then, this is in Arizona where we get air temperatures in the summer over 40 degrees, and these bars here indicate the duration of different experiments. So you can see that several of the experiments are going to have periods that are in the 40 degrees, but of course if you're looking for leaf development, you're going to be talking about the front end of these bars. So we're not really getting up that that much for leaf development into the 40-degree range, with the exception of a couple of experiments where we got emergence, but the plants died shortly thereafter. So we're getting sort of three or four leaves, and we'll see some of that data. Okay, just a quick view of the heated plots. So here's the infrared heater system, a thermal image showing that you get fairly uniform heating, and we have control plots, and it's all controlled with the infrared thermometry. Again, and you can see the effect. Here's a plot that's coming up faster with the heating. It's also, this is early in the morning, and it's there's no dew on the warm plots, but you can see the dew on the adjacent plots. Just the raw sort of baseline data. So these are leaf numbers for each planting date, and where they're red ones is the six experiments where we had the heaters. And these, of course, are means over all the plots. And we could run this through a simulation model, but this is where my concerns started to come in on the base temperature. Although, you know, we get, looks like a reasonably good prediction. We've clearly got some kind of a bias in our model, so I wanted to take a step back and just look at the assumptions on base temperatures. For a start, to keep it simple and to be consistent with most of the other data, I used just the average temperature and basically tested a grid from minus 9 to 7 degrees for the base temperature, 14 to 28 degrees for the optimum, calculated growing degree days for each one, and then used a linear regression between growing degree days and leaf number. I also included an effect of the plantings, because we're getting sort of an offset for each planting. They'll start out at a slightly different point. And I excluded the very first part of the leaf emergence, because those leaves tend to pop out faster. The data where we had frost damage, and we'll look at population effects very briefly. So here's the first result. So I've got the optimum temperature from 14 to 28, the base temperature from minus 9 to plus 7, and a root mean squared error, the lowest value is around 0.37, in a range of about plus 2 to 20, and or say plus 2 degrees or plus 3 degrees, 22 or 23 degrees for the optimum temperature. You can see this a little better if you look at it to sort of sideways, and there's too many lines on the graph there, so we sort of zoom in just in the range from 0 to plus 5 degrees on the base temperature. And so right around 3 degrees, and the curve for the 22-degree optimal temperature is giving us the lowest root mean squared error. But I'd be the first one to say, I think if you did a rigorous statistical test, you'd probably find that you can't detect a difference anywhere along this range. There's a fairly flat bottom on the temperature response. So just an initial conclusion is that the base temperature of 3 looks pretty good, the optimal temperature of 22, but there's this flatness issue. And here's some sample plots. You also see some systematic bias, and I never know if this is slight observer error or something else, or we're predicting too many leaves early too many leaves early and too few leaves late on a March 10th planting, September 28th, a different pattern. This really is, I guess, a little bit of a noisy graph. The red points are using a 0-degree base and a 20-degree optimum, which is very common in the literature. The blue triangle is the 3-degree, 22-degree, and so we start to pick up some of the outliers better. Same here. We're moving from here up to here and picking up the outlier. So that looks encouraging. Less encouraging is for some of the warmest experiments. We've got a really strong systematic bias. So here's leaf number and time. The blue dot or the green small dots are the observed data, and we're overestimating the early leaf numbers and underestimating the late ones. And these are for the warmer. These sort of warmer sections of the season, so we may still have some problems at higher temperature. So this got me asking the question, do we have the right temperature function? And we'll look at that briefly. There's also the possibility of putting in what I call sort of a diurnal adjustment to the growing degree days. So the simplest way is just add T max, T min, divide by 2, and sum those up. You can also truncate your T min and your T max if the temperature is below the base temperature. You set it equal to the base temperature, and this would be either T max or T min. And same for the optimal temperature. So I reran the optimization. The root mean squared error was a bit higher, suggesting you're not getting any improvement using a more complex routine to calculate growing degree days. And the base temperatures were quite different, minus 5 degrees and 12, and your optimal temperature 12 degrees. So this didn't look the least bit promising to me. So again, what about adding, putting in a more complex function? Maybe we're missing something here at an optimal temperature, or a second optimal and a lethal temperature. So here I'm just going to step through a bunch of plots. So this is, if you watch up here, this will be the second optimal temperature. And again, we've got the first optimum and the base temperature. And you go through, and so we're still staying in this region here, and it's moving a little bit as we go up in temperature. We're at 34 and then jump to 36, and there's no change. And so maybe I should go back on this page.
Yeah,
let's see. Okay, thank you. Should point out the root mean squared error is still in the same range, like around 0.36. And what's actually happening, is we're not getting any benefit here from adding the second optimal temperature. And if you go here, you can see partly why. We actually have, this is the mean temperature for the last day in the leaf number observations. At our mean temperatures, the highest mean temperatures we have are in the 32 or 34 degrees. So, So it's 32, 34. We've got essentially no power to fit out here. Even with this very wide range of planting dates and working in Arizona in the summer, we're just not getting any data which are showing that there's some kind of a decline in leaf appearance rate at the highest temperatures. There's something else I think we still need to look at is it's probably misleading to push the analyses this far when you actually have different numbers of different final leaf numbers. And I think it's missing. We're actually dealing with populations. It's not at all clear to me why we have eight leaves final on a few plants, 9 on others, and 10 on others. But just mushing them together and taking a mean is going to increase your error. In fact, you look at this, you could sort of say, well, you're going to have to expect sort of a half a leaf number error in any prediction, and our root mean squared error is below that. So I think this is another level of analysis we need to pursue. And then just to wrap up, again, going back to this table, here's our data now, 3 degrees and 22. I emphasize this is a spring wheat developed for warmer regions of the world. It was out of the CIMMYT breeding program, but the base temperature matches up pretty well with some of the data. The optimal temperature seems to support the 22 degree as opposed to 20, and I'm in the process of trolling the literature to find more experiments, particularly field experiments, where people have characterized the temperature responses. But I don't think the story is finished yet. But what I'd certainly say is if you're going to be modeling crop response to climate change, these differences are important, and we need to nail them down. So I think still the cardinal temperatures for leaf number still have uncertainty. There's some issues with the published data. I mentioned about the population effects behind that. The questions of mechanisms could still merit a lot more work. And I'd like to emphasize, I think these planting dates at Maricopa are a real opportunity. Planting dates are one of the least expensive sort of things you can do. Relieves a lot of the issues of controlled environments. So I think we'll be looking to do this again. I'm in discussion with Mike Ottman, the University of Arizona agronomist, to try this in sorghum next for a 2-year cycle with planting dates. There's some issues on experimental design. And then also, it'd be really nice to be able to protect the experiments from frost. We do get occasional frost, and I don't know if the best solution is T-face or blowers or a frost, some kind of, instead of a rain-out shelter, a frost-out shelter. But those are some of the directions we'd like to explore. Thank you.
Robert, I see your hand up. We have time for a question.
Thank you. Color development is an indicator of leaf maturation.
Yeah.
And I presume that's how you quantify this. Related issue is leaf initiation.
Right, right. Yeah.
And Dr. Rickman, I believe, shows in synchrony and filicron at the leaf and root border level. Now, detecting initiation is much more difficult, but still feasible.
Yeah. No, we have no evidence that, and if you think well, in fact, you can see them here. You're sort of looking back on it. We sort of wasted an opportunity here, at least for control treatments. We were focusing on the heated plots, which are these tiny, three-meter rings. So we didn't want to do destructive sampling. But another good thing about the planting date approach, if we just go to pure planting dates, we'll have, plenty of plant material to look at initiation, and I hadn't thought about the root issue, but that certainly would be very interesting to look. So I thank you for the suggestion.
And with regard to how you fit a temperature curve or radius, back in the 80s, I guess, we had done some work looking at enzyme kinetic effects and modifying that Arrhenius equation in terms of enzyme substrate affinity in leaves.
Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that our prediction of a biochemical optimum for wheat at that time was 21 degrees.
Okay.
Centigrade. So you might look that up. It's interesting how that purely laboratory-based theoretical analysis matches what you've seen in the field in terms of an optimum for wheat.
Yeah, and I should have mentioned too. I'm one of those people who's always sort of had a prejudice against growth chamber things. You're lower light intensities. You're doing funny things with the temperature regime. But I think it's quite striking that the optimal temperatures that people have reported are in the right neighborhood. I should mention the cow and moss. They fitted just a parabola to it, so it's not quite the same temperature
function.
Yeah.
But I must say, Jeff, we have evidence now from we're publishing a paper, getting one revised. We've calibrated our model and growth chamber data, and it does apply to the field. It works well.
Because
you get a good, much better temperature response at the high temperatures.
Yeah. Well, I think you want to have both. You want to cross match it, but this seems reassuring in that respect.
Okay. Thanks.
Thank you.